Ravana Innovation by Adrian K. Part 2, Ideologics, Italian for Liberty. This is a recording for the Ravana Innovation Part 2. This is brought to you without prejudice, with great beliefs in truth, decency, dignity, and inclusion in science. Please donate to the free Books for Life course today. The music for this presentation, Wander Away by Real, is from the Even Flight album. Please subscribe and follow Real on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Pandora, and more. Thank you.
You're feeling on shit. Don't blame it on, don't put it on me. You're dreaming on life. Oh, me. You go tit for tat, go tit for nothing. Ah, shit. You're full of it, you're full of suit, you're full of that slide.
Ravana Innovation, Part 2. There is the silent ovation, loud in its resignation. There is the origin, never fully and favorably understood. That the observance of silence in the face of ridicule may be the silent elusive presented to catastrophism. She delayed the discussion on the incident until the boys could read the warmth between them. Somewhat, reimagining the possibility couldn't be human again, couldn't be the great physician they knew. She sat down and faced them. He exhaled. I came into the full realization of what could be happening while the pleasure culminated. She closed her eyes slowly, opened them to waken under his gaze. The glint of humanity was back in his eyes. Well, quite the pleasure principle is excused, wouldn't you say? He shook his head, holding that gaze steadily. Don't patronize me, Beulah. You know I am intelligent and observant enough to know when something triggered. It was quite an overwhelming urge, regardless, she added. Nodded. Yes. One that came out of with an increasing sensation of pleasure. It held the necessity and the urgency to resolve the lack enabling the overwhelming sense of pain. You wouldn't happen to know anything about that, would you? He studied him, almost disbelieving him instantly, but with a hint of self-doubt to atone, stated, I am not certain of possible causation again. So I am going to explain a few things that happened while you were under the Ravana transformation. And you can tell me what you think caused the effect here, although I already have some ideas. He nodded in agreement. I must warn you that I read the notes you intentionally left behind. Okay, that should make this easy. Do you remember the EE qualifier? He nodded. The elusive element? Yes. He hesitated briefly. Well, it became so elusive it no longer held the distinction and could no longer keep you in relative existential order, that is. There was deficiency in levitating and artificially sustaining the mental calmness that kept you away from the help invasion. Neurocomposure? He asked. He hesitated briefly, shying away from alluding to the mental psychosis involved in the Earth invasion and the inevitability she endured to counteract such invocation with what may be considered an anti-psychosis. He could hardly fool him. Relative equilibrium for the F and the ATH to help retain the elusiveness of the E. The E squinted, starting enough. An anti-psychotic? He hesitated briefly. Neural inductions for composure, yes. He studied her, holding his thoughtful and amused expression despite her level of professionality with him. Was he being treated like a lesser intellectual? An anti-psychotic induction for neural composure? He hesitated, studying him. A non-relative optimization for the E. He raised an eyebrow. Are you beginning to intentionally evasive for a different reason or treating me strictly as a patient. Exhale. I'm simply explaining something to you, Dylan. He frowned. Do you mean Dr. Morris? He studied him. What was the cause for the sudden pride-induced anger? What was to become of it? Had he not taken his medication early in the morning? Yes, Dr. Morris, there was a need for restraint and sustenance of the relevant state. He spoke in a dark or softer tone. Would a symptomatic of the F invasion, as I recall them, are pretty distinctively predictive. There is the inevitability of the adultery, the yearning for pleasures and pain beyond mere human comprehension. There is the gradual but inevitable cellular death, the type 1 apoptosis, the type 2 accelerated autophagy. And totally, there is the inevitability of psychosis. Is this neurocomposure regimen about psychosis or something else? He was silent briefly. The accelerated autophagy is what induces the psychosis. He gained silence for a few seconds. There is no bottom line for it, then, is there? He nodded in agreement. There is no bottom line still. You're a miracle, Dr. Morris. He repeated the question to denote his seriousness on the issue. There is no bottom line for it, is there, Viola? Dr. Moore, he exhaled, flashed a sarcastic smile, and spoke in a more urgent tone. Dr. Moore, am I a walking corpse or a functional derelict? She squinted, swallowing the strange position the statement portrayed her and their relationship. Dylan, she cautioned. Dr. Morris to you, Dr. Moore, Dylan answered sharply. She knew in the moment he hadn't taken the prescribed medication. She worked hard to be both a doctor and pharmacist for while he was asleep. Was he testing her or testing his limits? He also knew if he refused to take them, she was going to need the boy's assistance to restrain him. Something she couldn't imagine going well for her and for. He had a steady gaze with him, not so overwhelming. Any indeterminate action from his inclined psychotic propensity would be disheartening. He'll be easily overpowered. He held her eyes. Am I a zombie entity brought awake for your lover boy dreams with antipsychotics? Or is this something more sinister than that? Am I Pinocchio? Am I a real boy? The questions reverberated in the room, so did her silence, while in fear of some uncontrolled response from him. I am afraid if you cannot speak to me with the professional decorum I expect of you, he spoke in a judgmental. Is there a bottom line for this neural composure? He hesitated briefly, thinking of some way to signal admission without acknowledging what he wanted. Blind of us being blind or poor. He hesitated briefly. A regression line? A multi-directional regression line, she replied. Bottom line is not the only aspect unresolved, but it is a line that has directional limitations. He nodded in agreement. Not to south, east to west. If we snooze, we lose. I already snoozed once and now. Can I infer conditioning for the neural composure optimization within temporal limits? You're going to tell me about it. He remained silent for a few seconds. There is a pleasure playing principle inductance between the hip and the HEA, which necessitates psychoneurological arranging of inception initiatives, receptivity, pleasure, pain, interrupted, skill initiatives without the action potential. He exhaled. The insensitivity to pain in oneself and in those of others, but pain you must feel, so the necessity of pain is what must be your fear first. The very thing to stop the destructive and murderous initiatives of behavior. The very thing that could stop the dehumanization and death that came with the invasion. He frowned. So when you no longer want to inflict pain, the question, Dr. Moore, is, do you want to inflict pleasure? He held his eyes steadily, in a low, intentionally detached tone. It had to be done. Pleasure is a sensitivity marker for the pain. What becomes actionable must derive the same in reality. Seek pleasure as care for the pain, with the presiding pain as a proposal. The advent of a reckoning determines the constitution, that of its outline, includes space, that of its misfire, concludes the negative. The harsh knock on the door came close to dawn, startling them out of the comfort of their bed. They both stared at the door, unwilling to approach it, knowing the full implications of the discovery. Who was she to be ashamed of, afraid of, a full-blooded woman with a human right to consent? Her heart raced, having never been that way with the boys, with expectation of some unforeseeable retribution. But the help invasion had taught her to be brave in ways she never thought possible. She had been able to keep them at bay. They had never dared to knock on her door or sneak into it. It was apparent that her respectability was at a loss because of her love life. How was she to save herself? How was she to save Dylan? What was she to do if things got out of hand? Her anxiety deepened at the thought of the innumerable ways things could get out of hand. If they killed him to harm her, would she kill? If she kills, would she ever be the same? Did her ethical leanings matter in the face of such horrors? Should it? He moved confidently towards the door. A knocking could break the door any minute, and he put near it. Dylan, he called with a cautious tremor to her tone, but he was unrelenting in his approach towards inevitable trouble. She could do nothing about it. His gaze towards her was that of resignation and the inevitability of the moment. She understood it and held her breath as the door opened. He opened the door to two automatic rifles and a barrier. She clutched at her nightdress, crossing her arms over her chest as some inexplicable form of self-protection. Dick and Alan held the automatic rifles to his face, the nozzles nudging at him. They took him to his knees with them, complied ungracefully. Her mind raced on the possibility of the fears she knew there about. It was evident in post-contact assault on Dylan. Was there some superpower he had she hadn't known about yet? Some unrelenting, energizing instinct that could kill the man in his split second, live out with nothing but regret? Dick retrieved his rifle, held Alan's eyes, and issued a direct command. Love a boy here makes a sudden move. Blow his beastly brains out. Viola gasped. Dick turned to Viola in that instant. He spoke in a low, mocking tone. One would think the boy toy doctor is still getting better, slowly becoming human. But I bet we both know what he is well enough to do, don't we now, Dr. Moore? Dick shook his head. Well, come on, Dr. Moore. Pleasure can't turn to pain that quickly. Was that a test of his humanity or the abuse of yours? Closer to Viola. Dylan groaned. Alan Preston knows about the automatic titling instrument voice. He said, I'm studying as a single carrier speaker. Hey, dickhead. Mistakes happen around here, no one comes back from. You wanna be like that? Dylan went on silent. You must answer questions when you're asked, Dr. Morris. Not doing that shit that people killed while you were asleep, dreaming or whatever the hell that was. Alan pushed the automatic down on Dylan's forehead, keeping his head down. Are you still a human, though? You're not you. You're sleeping. What the hell? Do you lose yourself? You had poor respectable morals? Do no harm or whatever your doctors call it when you were under asleep or whatever the hell she called it? Dylan remained silent. Viola knew Alan was at a high and would not stop talking trash and is in full propensity of physical violence unless stopped. Which is the question, Alan? Shut the hell up, Dr. Moore, Dick snapped. Dylan groaned. Dick turned around to him his automatic at Dylan's head. If Alan misses, I won't miss a fraction of an inch for any given split second, Dr. Murray.
He's an excellent marksman, Alan added. Something a medical doctor may not know. Dylan exhaled. Dick continued. I may not be half an inch as smart as you, but I have the action and a premonition of guns, ammunition, and lots of weaponry. We survived the episode by fighting. You! Even when you were around, I had the luxury of being a doctor, the one who got to preach. Tell us not to commit war crimes. Live accordingly. We fought and watched our people, especially the women, drop down like flies. You have no idea. Yeah, what that fighting was about. You? I have no idea what that is. So, Dr. Mark, I will tell you again, politely this time, to answer questions whenever you are asked. I just want some respect around here now. Is that too much to ask? Viola held her tongue, wondering how the world had radically changed. Human element having gone bananas, losing its mind and heart to help. Answer the questions, Dr. Morris, Dick commanded. Dylan remained silent. Despite her fears, Viola couldn't help speaking in the predicament.
There are about 3 questions and counting now. Which one do you want him to answer?
Dick did the expected, retrieved his automatic, and turned to face Viola again.
Shut the hell up, Dr. Moore.
You know what? He hesitated, scanning her appearance.
Maybe you did all this for you.
She couldn't have, Nita complained. Dick shook his head.
She sure could have. She nursed him like a baby. She's got a thing for him. And then, lo and behold, he ends up in her bed at dawn. Something he wouldn't have done had he not been nursed to death and then back from it.
She couldn't have, Nathan maintained. But Dick's doubt was not thinning. He squinted.
Is he retarded in some way and you're using him?
This happened before the app invasion, she replied. Dylan closed his eyes at the thought of her insinuation, holding against the urge to deny such in the predicament. Alan kissed Dylan's forehead with the automatic.
Is that true, Dr. Morris? You two were at it before the app invasion?
Dylan kept his eyes closed and decided on going along with Eula's lies. Swallowing the pride he already lost, he opened his eyes and said, yes. Silence was maintained for a few seconds. Alan spoke.
It wouldn't be crazy that we 3 want the same thing you've got over there. Is that too much to ask?
Dylan shrugged. No. Viola shivered, absorbing the sharp psychosomatic sensation of utter pain. "Know what?" Alan asked. Dylan held Alan's eyes. "No, I don't think that's too much to ask." Silence presided in the room again. Alan spoke. "And?" Dylan continued. "And she's a free woman. She can do whatever she wants. She gets to decide." Dick let out a sick, sarcastic laughter and began to pace. "This is not happening. It couldn't happen if a dead man wasn't forcefully brought back to life for whatever reason. And we all know it was her. Who is to turn on it? She did this." "She couldn't have," Nathan maintained. Dick stopped pacing and walked over to stand beside Alan. "I'm afraid I have to inform you that we two will be taking our turns. We." Viola let out a sharp, shocking sound that did not stop. Alan spoke in a stern, sympathetic tone. "Calm down, Dr. Moore, please stop." She stopped briefly to catch her breath before the realization of what could happen to her overtook her mind. She belted out a loud and more emotionally charged shriek.
"Shut up, Dr. Moore," Dick yelled.
"Oh, shut the hell up, Dr. Moore," Alan scolded, pushing the automatic against Dylan's head harshly.
"It ain't that bad. You did it."
Her shrieks turned into loud cries which grew in intensity. Dick leaned over Dylan and yelled, "Is no one got her stop her or have to bitch slap her?"
"Beulah,"
Dick called and maintained a brief second of silence to allow her cries to stop. "Screaming would not help. We already completed the necessary action. Tell them about our plan to extend the cure." Dick frowned, extending the cure. Viola resolved her chaotic nerves and focused on his brilliant suggestion. She spoke in an intermittently breathless tone.
"We're going to make sure the cure works faster. And you can go out there and pick whatever female you want at early stages of the health invasion. And they will be treated with better, faster conditioning than Dylan. If otherwise, you touch me in any shameful way, I will kill myself and burn the lab."
"Calm down, Dr. Moore," Dick said in a much softened tone. "I don't want anyone but Dr. Moore," Nathan announced. Dick glanced over to Nathan. "You don't know that." Nathan shook his head, directed his eyes to hold Dick's eyes.
"I know that. I want Dr. Moore. We have to kill him, like we said." Viola screamed.
"Shut the hell up, Dr. Moore, and let me explain," Dick scolded. Viola quieted. He continued. "We were hyped when Nathan told us Dr. Morris was sleeping with you. We blooded whatever came out in the heat of the moment. We can't actually afford to kill your boy if you need him to save our world."
I definitely need him to save our world," she interrupted. "Or nothing is saved. I need him."
Dick rushed the boys to a corner and they whispered amongst themselves. "Dr. Moore," Nathan called as Viola rushed to Dylan's side to hug and comfort him. The boys came back to find both physicians in a kneeling position, comforting each other. "Okay," Dick announced. "We get this subject, your boy comes with us. It's the strongest collateral we've got in case this turns to treachery. We die, it dies. If for whatever reason I smell something fishy on your part, at any and all stages of this process, Dr. Moore, it's his head." Everything independent and biological is in the entity description. A foreign object in the matter of actual life, neither matter nor mind nor measure, but delusional in nature, in science, in life, a state of no material consequence or aftermath from mischance. To something there is reality, truth, and nature. They packed themselves in a 4x4 like feral dogs escaping some earthly realm toward a much harsher reality of solemn savagery. Dylan had a sudden and sharp surge of emotional impulse, a growing sense of growing discomfort, symptomatic of asphyxia, a rise of generalized apathy, and his rush to self-diagnosis rushed him quickly to position rather than prognosis. He yanked the protective gas mask he was forced to wear as a most necessary cautionary specification. Dick glanced at him in the backseat through the front camera. "What the hell are you doing? Put that shit back on!" And he mewed in voice as strongly and strangely as he could master, unsure of the potency of his humility. Dick studied him through the mirror. "I don't have time for your shit, Dr. Morris. Dr. Moore is not here to save you, however much he begged us to tranquilize. Killing you will be easy, so don't play crap with me today. We have 5 help ones to catch." Dylan frowned. 5? "Don't correct my math, Dr. Morris. A lot can go wrong in this game." Dylan held Dick's eyes through the mirror. "I am Bill, having hospitable expectation for 3. He shrugged. "And we didn't expect to find you in our bed. A lot can go wrong in this game." The exchange ended the argument, and Dylan looked out the window as the car traveled, grateful to see the end of the strange discourse. The rancid smell of human regression was only that of biological decay. He was in a psychoactive detachment, helpless force. The streets were emptied of the cordiality of social interactions, and the voyage sang like some unfortunate cord stretched thin against its own cord. Aside from his subliminal perception of cobwebs and dust, a decaying pile of uncared for garbage and corpses, the man-made infrastructure around him looked pristine. The dilapidation in the appearance of social and infrastructural spaces didn't happen. The infected had no taste for human flesh. Based on the psychobiological effect of the infection, they were rather starving to death without hope in the overwhelming sensation of hunger normally applicable. The lack of instinct to reverse the course of the hunger seemed involuntary and inevitable. The absorption of the human element into psychosis was absurd. He wondered briefly what the scarcity of F1 infected populace could do to the aims of the tree. How easily can simple deficiencies turn horrible? With the mind neural impulse behavior coordination of the F1 in degeneration, the infected held some inexplicable hostility towards others, and the tendency towards violence increased greatly. So did the burgeoning crime wave that followed. Their appearance was the same or nearly the same as their human counterparts. There was hardly any physical trait to tell of the infection. They indulged mainly in easily provoked or largely unprovoked attacks, despite and sparked sideways or parallel, like some mania on the consistent escapade of violence. F2 symptoms devastate physical appearance. The symptomatic hemorrhage, cerebral edema, encouraged the swelling of the head to twice or thrice its original size. It seemed fortunate, barely, when the eventual fatality of the congestive heart failure put an end to the extreme and extremely dangerous crime wave it was notorious for. F3 symptoms devastated physical appearance and aggravated the thirst for violence. Their thirst for violence became so unbearable, mass execution of F3 infected humans were ordered. They were killed on sight in some district for the sweet instant initiative they had for harming others. The government offered rewarding benefits for their body count. They became a game, a most dangerous game exploit, as they did not stop their short burst initiative of active violence until their prey was dead. They hunted with blind, inexplicable, and unprovoked fury. Within the framework of the split second initiative towards violence is also the split second fidelity of sudden cardiac death. F3 infected is the sharpest instinctual animal. A time-limited predestined beast, a catastrophic ticking time bomb. It occurred to Dylan with renewed realization that they were on a human hunt rather than a scavenger hunt the boys were used to while he was asleep. They circumvented a sparsely populated area before they saw any sign of life. The car stopped when Dick,
chose the spot and gathered the usual crew the usual way before acknowledging Dylan. Unused to the ritualistic therapy session before an inevitable comeback, Dylan stayed back and, on discovery of the ritual, put himself back. Dick invited him with a slight expression of invitation mixed with disdain. He accepted the invitation by leaning towards them slightly. "Can Dr. Moore do your job, Dr. Morris?" "You may die out here today," Dick said. Dylan pondered the question, wondering if it was a question of statement. "The deal was perfectly clear. Bella told you to preserve my life at all costs. That's because she knows she can't do her job without me." Dick shrugged. "Well, costs change depending on the circumstance. For instance, I suggest you put your gas mask on to prevent the effect of the tear gas, meant to incapacitate the infected alongside help prevent the possibility of infection every step of the way. Are you immune to the toxicity of such gases, too?" Dylan considered his request merely briefly before deciding his dizziness as well as his probability of surviving toxic gases was a matter of testing time. He put the gas back on, knowing its risk and prescribed benefits. In an authoritative tone, they spoke to the group. "The first initiative command is to kill on sight except one apparent beneficial element today. And I don't mean a maybe element that there is a slight possible trace of humanity there. There must be clear and apparent signs of humanity there. Any slight abnormality of the head and you shoot to kill. A flash of light, a normal size undeceased head, and yes, use your tranquilizer to get the subject. Otherwise, shoot to kill. We run this, we do it as a pack. Do not rely on Dr. Morris to use his gun yet on. It seems to have everything we don't have, that is, some strange in humanity." He held Nathan's eyes briefly. "Keep him close to you. I and Alan can carry the main job." They made their way effortlessly toward what used to be a gated system of apartment complexes of three floors towards the apartment building with the moat east. Dick recognized the building for their second raid attempt. The first was to recruit best combat soldiers, possibly trapped with air-infected close relatives and associates. They came back empty. He designated the first floor to Nathan and Dylan, the second to Alan before he took to the floor to strike. The always stretched far and near. Speed, as well as skills, mattered most in the execution of the mission. He decided quickly combat from the other hand of the wall would be a smart move. In a whimsical but deliberate spring slide, he made his way to the back, dropping two cans of military grade CS tear gas. Once on the extreme, he made sure the tranquilizer gun strapped tightly to the main automatic he had was securely fastened to the semi-automatic he held, which had been chosen for the deliberation needed in the proper eradication of L3 infected bodies. He pondered on the probability of the effectiveness of the 8 sensor goggles briefly, equipped with the effectiveness of the CS tear gas needed for a geometric measure of the shape of the head. It was the least effective gear they carried. As the first door opened and the integrity of the head was observed in the environment, he realized what he had predicted. The 8 sensor signatures were faint, and 3 subjects were fully cold-blooded animals. But regardless of the faintness of their signatures, under inspection, a lack of symmetry was readable. The first shot was an instant hit, bringing 2 head-free bodies into focus. The fluidity of the cerebral edema had always been unpredictable, providing a large environment for the bullet rather than a kill shot of disintegrated matter. The first headshot barely made a difference, but for the all used as the entry point. The effects, if felt at all, were mostly felt with the passage of time. To bring an F3 to a stop, he needed the effect of the bullet to be felt. To kill the creature, he needed to make a fatal mark. Killing them required an atomically viable position. Killing them required a lot of bullets. He brought a lot with him, as well as an automatic rifle. The next shots were a round of 2, and the F3 brought the second F3 body to the close. Before he triggered 2 quick successive shots into the chest. Come on, you shit-headed suckers!" Dick yelled, triggering the hypersonic sound range of all possible F3 around before he broke the door to the closet came down. No each signature was found in the apartment. He took down an F2 with the F shot in the hallway as he emerged from the first apartment before I broke down the door to the adjacent apartment to discover faint extinguishers out of it for Jim outside. They were cheap. The source was in a closed door room in the apartment. It killed the male in the room conveniently, equipped with a pistol, and triggered the tranquilizer gun for the first time. The male had been holding a pistol. Sign of life? He realized the irrelevancy in his judgment. He had to kill the male for the female with the same instinct the male had to try and kill him. His instinct was sharper, but their foundational instinct was similar. He rushed out of the room into the view of an F3 almost too late. Had he miscalculated their flight reaction to the disturbing noise of him breaking down doors? He triggered downward until the third shot shot the F3 body briefly. For the fourth shot, he raised the semi-automatic from the abdominal cavity back to the thoracic cavity for another shot. The F3 body was yet merely sealed. Dick studied the body for the 2 seconds it could afford in case of its reawakening. The edema complex was present all over the body, the cerebral edema being the worst. The shot, as it went downward, had been shot in between cavities to maximize possible damage. Why was the F3 sealed and not down? Advanced stages of the head or some mutation on their part?
The head tree bridged the nose with extended gas mask, having had the extended distal propensity surge of the advanced head tree stage, and Ed butted him with a questionable deflated force. Dick staggered backward, shooting the tranquilizer as it went backward to further destroy the intensity of the approach. The body came to another sluggish halt. Dick retrieved the undead automatic from his side holster and didn't release the trigger on the midlight drift from thoracic to pelvic cavity. The hemp tree dropped to the floor, and he rushed towards the hallway again, cleared the floor, and searched for another airborne potential lifeline. A catastrophe to unearth, a misadventure. A misadventure to a tragedy, a misfortune. And a misfortune to a real nation, casualty. He got the girls down to the base floor to face new problems. The headcount for the airbodies was too short, and Dylan was missing. His fluid-drenched, blooded gas mask touched Nathan's in a jiffy. You couldn't even handle an old ass deader than a living doctor, could you now, stupid ass? Nathan spoke in a subdued tone. It freaked out on me. Seemed something about being hypersonic and delirious. I could hardly hold on to one body count. I had none. I could have mistakenly shot him instead of an IF. I made my way out to ensure I didn't make stupid mistakes. I lost him barely more than a minute ago.
And?
I'm sure he'll be fine. I'll go back once the CS gas fully dissipates, Nathan replied. He closed his eyes for a few seconds, swallowing his anger before he dashed onto the first floor of the apartment complex. He had appointed the first floor to Nathan and Dr. Morris because it had been an easier target and they had been easily raided. The smoke was clearing as he went inside. Dr. Morris, he called. He didn't get an answer. He cleared the open door rooms easily as he went from room to room. When he got to the porch, he encountered a door slightly ajar on a water-drenched floor. He frowned. Without a re-evaluation or second thought to the implication of a wet floor, he traced the pathology of the wet floor to a strange occurrence, at least one he considered strange. Two head bodies were entangled in sexual intercourse on the floor. He soon corrected himself. Dr. Morris was having sex with one of the female bodies on the wet floor. Dick made a quick calculation for the toxicity and danger levels of either of them and chose the F body.
What the hell are you doing, Dr. Morris?
He asked, circumventing Dylan's active back to assess the F body for execution. He ejected two shots into the head of the F body on the floor beneath Dylan. The consequence was felt simultaneously, the miscalculation realized just as quickly. The head body still induced catalepsy. Dick saw the quick gleam of the Roger Max 9 9mm pistol he had personally handed to Dylan for protection. He released the hold on his gun to hold onto the holes in his neck, precisely placed, one on top of the other, like some bipolar flashcard of misfortune slowly draining the fortune of life out of him. Dylan was still pumping away on top of the damaged head free body as Dick dropped to the floor in an helpless heap of unpredictable disappointment. Nathan rushed in 3 seconds later, scanned the scenario in a split second before pumping two quick tranquilizer shots into Dr. Morris. He shot the head body twice in the head and twice in the chest before Alan came into the room.
and scream.
You go this and that and this and that shit. You go this and that and this and that shit. You are not afraid. You are not afraid. Yeah, it won't be the same. Nobody can face that pain and come back and see. No way. You are not afraid. Yeah, it won't be the same.
The music for this presentation, Wonder the Way by Real, is from the Even Flight album. Please subscribe and follow Real on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Pandora, and more. Thank you.